Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Tonight, CNN Town Hall, just 6 months in office behind him. All the same, he's pressing forward on his agenda. Like someone who knows how little time he might have to get it done. It was clear from the questions tonight at Cincinnati's Mount St. Joseph University. Job one remains COVID, with the virus taking a greater and greater toll every day on the unvaccinated. The economy was also a big part of the conversation, both at the town hall and back in Washington, with the president defending his infrastructure plan, but also the goal of doing it with bipartisan support. There was more, of course, but I want to get some first reaction from our panel here, starting with CNN senior political commentator David Axelrod. David, you worked with President with Vice President Biden, obviously during the Obama administration. How do you think he did tonight?
I think he did fine. You know, if the presidency were a decathlon, this is sort of his event, right? Mm-hmm. He gets to talk to people. He gets to emote. He doesn't have to kind of color within the lines in terms of time. But I think he did fine. It also underscores there are very challenging questions. I thought the most interesting thing, and you touched on it, was his insistence on his belief in the fact that Republicans and Democrats can actually get things done. He ran on that. I think he fundamentally believes it. He seems confident that this infrastructure bill will happen. And even on the voting rights question, I mean, I thought it was really revealing when he said, I do not want to throw this Congress into chaos so we don't get anything done. I thought he was very honest about that. Not going to please everybody on the left in his own party, clearly. But I think it probably resonated with a lot of Americans.
Dan, I mean, it was interesting, though. He did say, the well has been so poisoned, but clearly does still talk about bipartisanship and believes in trying to have that.
Exactly. And he's working on maybe the one issue. I don't want to sound too pessimistic, but let's be realistic. The one issue where that is really achievable and at his fingertips, which is infrastructure. Yes, they had a failed procedural vote today, but that kind of masks real progress that is still going on behind the scenes. And that's according to not just Democrats, but Republicans who I'm talking to about this bipartisan bill. That would be a huge win, not just on the substance, but on keeping the campaign promise that he talked again about today that you were referring to, actually doing something that people will be able to feel. Talked about the bridge that they want to fix there in Cincinnati in their communities, and infrastructure is one of them. Voting rights, all those other things, which are, as much as he wants to get it done in a bipartisan way, they and historically have been done in a bipartisan way, very much so. Right now, those issues have been poisoned in a partisan way.
I do think it was also, to your point, so notable. He called out, he's in the state of Ohio, mm-hmm. once a swing state. We'll see if that remains true. But called out the two Republicans in that state, Senator Rob Portman, and Governor Mike DeWine, and made a very clear point that he believes that they are people of integrity. He believes that they believe that he can come to the table in a good faith way. He says that Republicans know that he keeps his word. He doesn't lie to them. And that's the Joe Biden in terms of the kind of atmospherics of it all. He's governing in this sort of moderate way, in an atmospheric way. But then on the flip side of that, the policy is very progressive. The policy is not, moderate. This is someone who is proposing $3.5 trillion in spending in a reconciliation bill on top of over $1 trillion in spending on an infrastructure bill. So you have both Joe Biden showing up there saying, I'm going to fight for liberal priorities, but I'm going to do it in a way where I think I can still reach across the aisle. And he is steadfast in that. It is a very unusual, I think, balancing act that he is trying to do here. And not very many politicians can actually.
He makes it hard, though, for Republicans to attack him for that very reason. I mean, though he's proposing all these things, he's sort of selling it in a folksy, in a very Joe Biden kind of way.
Exactly. I mean, the Republicans are having a hard time. You know, they actually say pretty straightforwardly, we know you like the guy, but just keep in mind that his policies are X, Y, and Z. And it's a reflection of the fact that Biden comes across in a way that I think is difficult to demonize, but at the same time is pushing forward with these very aggressive policies and doing so, as you just said, as if the clock is ticking, because it very much is.
I do want to play something that he said about bipartisanship in response to the infrastructure bill.
Republicans who try to paint you and your party as anti-police.
They're lying.
No, look, never once. We have to change police conduct. We have to have rules where...
That was obviously the wrong clip. We'll talk about policing a little bit later on. But he defends himself, Scott, on bipartisanship.
Yeah, I mean, look, he talks like a moderate. He talks like someone that, you know, you would expect to be like a reasonable from a governing perspective. But as was said, he governs like a progressive. I mean, he has produced a lot of progressive policies that I would expect have made a lot of people on the far left pretty happy and maybe surprised at how progressive he has been. I think his best traits were on display tonight from a just purely political perspective, and reminded me of why he beat Donald Trump last year. On the pandemic, he appears to be sincere about giving a damn about the American people and what we've been through on this pandemic. It's what Donald Trump could never get right, and it's what he got right. It was on display tonight. He was sharp on the vaccines and honest about the vaccines. It was wise for him to bring up that they've been in development for 20 years to try to negate the argument that, well, they just got developed over a period of months. I thought that was his strongest moment. I don't agree with a lot of his policies. I was very unimpressed with him on inflation. He obviously didn't give a satisfactory answer to the guy who owns the restaurants about, I can't find people to hire. So he clearly still is tripping over, I think, some of these economic issues. But where he is very difficult to beat, we saw it last time around, he still got it, is just on this issue of, look, we may not all agree and we may have our differences, but I do sincerely care about what you've been through and about what we need to do to get out of it. And it's frankly why, if you look at all these opinion polls, his highest job approval number is on handling COVID. It gets worse. You go down the list. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why he's above water, because of that trait right there.
He made a little news on it, too, I thought, by saying that he thought that there would be an answer from the CDC mm-hmm. on vaccines for children by the fall.
Yeah.
Which I think was probably welcome news for a lot of
parents. That was newsworthy, and the fact that he said he thought kids under 12 would be wearing masks in schools, I think, was newsworthy. You know, the bright side of that is he expects the schools to be open, right. Which I think will also land, I don't like it, frankly, that my poor kids are going to be running around with masks, but at least they're going to school, because I can tell you, having four at home who needed to be in school, I was pretty unhappy that the schools were closed, and I think a lot of parents were in that boat.
Yeah. Look, I think... Don Lemon spoke for a lot of people when he said, are you going to protect voting rights or the filibuster? The Joe Biden bipartisanship is probably at its best on infrastructure. It's unbelievable. If he can pull this off, if he can be as progressive as he is, but also bring on Republicans, that that is a vindication of Joe Biden's bipartisanship. And I think it's going to happen. But when you're talking about voting rights, you have pain and panic at the base of this party about what's going to happen if all of these attacks on voting rights stand and go unanswered by a Democratic administration. And I thought Don Lemon was speaking for 40 million people when he looked the president in the eye and said, are you going to protect voting rights? You're going to protect the filibuster. And I thought that the president's answer, saying I don't want to eliminate it, but I do want this talking filibuster, I think that's the right answer. I think that would actually satisfy people, but how are we going to get there? I think you can't get away from the fact that democracy is under some threat here. But the other three challenges I think Joe Biden has and the Democrats have, inflation, crime, and COVID, those are the three big threats. Those are the marbles on the stairs for Democrats going forward. I thought on inflation, I thought he gave a pretty decent answer. He said, listen, we've got some good people saying that it's temporary. I hope it's temporary. But on the crime question, he went into the gun control argument, which nobody believes is going to get anything done about. And on the COVID question, I think he's relatively strong. But for me, I just don't want us to get away from the fact that there is pain and panic at the base of this party over voting, and I don't think he had great answers.
I do want to play something that he said about COVID, because he was actually just factually wrong, and I think it's important to point that out. Let's hear what he said.
One last thing that's really important is we're not in a position where we think that any virus, including the Delta virus, which is much more transmissible and more deadly in terms of non-unvaccinated people, the various shots that people are getting now cover that. You're okay. You're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations.
Which is obviously just not the case. Obviously, Dr. Lena Nguyen is also joining us. Dr. Nguyen, that's something you picked up on clearly.
Right. I mean, I was actually disappointed by President Biden's speech tonight or his answers tonight, because I actually thought that he was answering questions as if it were a month ago. He's not really meeting the realities of what's happening on the ground. I mean, we now have triple the number of infections in the U.S. versus a month ago. We have escalation in cases all over the country because of the Delta variant. And we actually don't know the answers to a lot of questions. He was talking about how if you get the vaccine, you're well protected from having severe disease. That's true. But we actually don't know how well you're protected from mild illness, and whether with the Delta variant, if you're vaccinated, could you still be contagious to other people? We don't know the answer to that. I actually thought it was irresponsible.
Because, I mean, that's a crucial question.
That's right.
Can you pass it on to your loved ones? Can you pass it on to your children?
That's right. Here's what we do know. We know that the vaccine reduces your likelihood of carrying the virus and the amount of virus that you would carry. But with the Delta variant, a person infected with the Delta variant carries 1,000 times the amount of virus compared to previous variants. And so that's the problem. We don't actually know about this transmission question. And I think that President Biden actually led people astray when he said, if you're vaccinated, you can take off your mask. We don't know that. I think he let go of a really important opportunity tonight. I think he could have said to the audience, you all are protected because everybody here is vaccinated. You're safe if you're vaccinated and everybody around you is vaccinated. But if you are vaccinated and are around people who are unvaccinated, you should be keeping a mask on. Getting the vaccine can save your life, but I actually think that President Biden's message could have led people astray.
I'll be honest, I think from a political perspective, he was as sharp on COVID and on the vaccines as he was on anything, because his job is to get people to get the vaccine. You know, they don't expect him walking around in a lab coat or whatever, but his job is to express optimism about the vaccines being effective. And I believe it's true that if you get the vaccine, you are highly unlikely to die or be in the ICU, which is what he said. And that's, I mean, honestly, that is what he needs people to do.
That was clearly his goal.
He oversold it.
But he also has this, you know, he wants to get people vaccinated. I think there's a real recognition, as he kind of articulated, that hearing from him isn't necessarily the way to get those people who need to get vaccinated. They have to hear it from people they trust who are closer to the ground, their minister, their doctors, their neighbor. And that's what they're working on. But I think he had a strategy tonight. You know, I take Dr. Nguyen's point, and she's certainly right about the dangers associated with this variant. But his strategy was to go in there and try and calm the country down a little and say, there's an answer. The answer is to get vaccinated.
There was also another moment, and we have the bite of which we'll queue up in a second after you say something, which was about he sort of made fun of folks on Fox and elsewhere who are now giving advice that people should go out and be vaccinated, and then corrected himself, saying, you know what, actually, I shouldn't be making fun of this. This is good. And it certainly is. I mean, you certainly want that message because it's fact.
That's what the White House wanted. Right. And they are starting to get what they wanted. I just will say that I was watching with another network on next to our television, and the exact opposite message was being sent as the president was speaking on CNN, making that plea. But, you know, I wonder what Dr. Nguyen would think of this. Just anecdotally, I know we all know people who are vaccinated and feel safe, who have gotten COVID and haven't ended up hospitalized, but have ended up pretty sick compared to how we thought we would be when we're vaccinated. So what I wonder, just from a public health perspective, and frankly a political perspective, because it's about expectations, is whether you say, if you, the unvaccinated, don't get your vaccines, you're going to continue to allow this virus to mutate and for variants to be as infectious as they are, and it will make it impossible for all of us to be safe. Maybe it's more nuanced than he can be, but that is the reality of what's happening right now.
Let's play that, what he said about sort of the altar call.
One of those other networks is not a big fan of mine. One you talk about a lot. But if you notice, as they say in the southern part of my state, they've had an altar call, some of those guys. All of a sudden, they're out there saying, let's get vaccinated. Let's get vaccinated. The very people before this were saying, I shouldn't make fun of it. That's good. It's good. It's good. We just have to keep telling the truth.
I mean, it is good.
It is good.
Shouldn't make fun of it. Yeah. And the fact that, I mean, look, there's no coincidence here. Sean Hannity, I saw Tommy Tuberville tweeting about it today. Scalise got his shot. I mean, obviously, the Republican hierarchy has seen something that tells them we can't keep going down this road. I mean, at a minimum, as a political matter, but hopefully they got it as a moral and a healthcare matter. There's no coincidence here. And so the fact that they are coming on board is a good thing.
Yeah.
Too late? Yes. Good thing today, yes. I was glad that he acknowledged
half the country has not been fully vaccinated.
And by the way, we're never going to get to 100% on this. Mm-hmm. We won't get to 100% on anything. 36% of the people get a flu shot, which is crazy to me, too. But we have to get as many as we can. And so if these Republicans come on board and these media types come on board, that is a good thing. And he ought to celebrate it. And I think Democrats ought not take the opportunity to make fun of it.
In Florida, you know, Ron DeSantis was speaking up this week about the vaccination issue in his state, trying to get people to get vaccinated. But one thing that he did talk about was feeling like there's a risk here in telling people that there are not enough benefits to vaccination, mm-hmm. saying to them, well, if you're vaccinated, you still have to wear your mask all the time. He believes that that actually discourages people mm-hmm. from getting vaccinated. So this is what the White House is trying to balance. I think that in an ideal world, sure, they would probably like for more people, especially in high transmission states, whether they are vaccinated or not, to wear a mask. But recognizing that in some places, in parts of the country, the places where Biden's words are the least effective, that kind of message could end up backfiring mm-hmm. At a critical time when they need people to just understand something that's pretty black and white. If you get the vaccine, you are probably not going to die or be hospitalized as a result of this virus.
The president was also asked tonight about the January 6th committee, the back and forth between Speaker Pelosi and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Let's listen to that.
You know, the Republicans removed all their picks today for the January 6th committee, the select committee. Nancy Pelosi rejected two of them. The first thing I want to ask is, what's your reaction to that? But number two, if Republicans and Democrats can't come together, right, to investigate the biggest attack on our Capitol in 200 years, what makes you think that they can come together on anything?
These people. No, I mean it. I'm not being facetious. Democrats and Republicans. I don't care if you think I'm Satan reincarnated. The fact is, you can't look at that television and say nothing happened on the 6th. You can't listen to people who say this was a peaceful march.
And Caitlin Collins is our chief White House correspondent. She was in the hall tonight. Caitlin, what do you make of what you heard?
Well, it's notable because this is really the first time he has weighed in on what's happening with this commission. Given all of the developments we saw today, where Pelosi rejected two of those members that, of course, Kevin McCarthy wanted to put on that panel, two of those Republicans who had voted to overturn the results of the election, he responded by withdrawing all of the Republicans that he had submitted to be on that panel. And President Biden was saying, essentially, we have to view this from a perspective of reality, of what actually happened that day. Because what he was alluding to there by saying it doesn't matter what your opinion is of him and whether or not you like his politics, you can't ignore the reality of what happened that day. It's not a two-sided argument like some of the other topics that he addressed tonight, what his politics are, what Republicans' politics are. He was saying you have to have a clear-eyed view of what actually happened on January the 6th. And as we know, some of the Republicans who wanted to, or that Kevin McCarthy wanted to put on that panel were ones who have denied reality, some of them who have tried to whitewash or downplay the riot that happened on the Capitol that day. And so he seemed to be supportive of Speaker Pelosi's moves. We know that our sources have told us they are very deferential to whatever it is the House Speaker wants to see on that panel, how that's ultimately going to look like, and how that investigation is going to end up, Anderson.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk more about the panel right here with our panel as well. Be right back.
So
we discussed this before the break. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy's decision to pull five of his members from the Select Committee on January 6 after House Speaker Pelosi vetoed two of his choices, Jim Banks of Indiana and Jim Jordan of Ohio. Both voted in the same chamber that was barricaded against a violent mob just before to overturn election results. Congressman McCarthy had this to say.
House Democrats must answer this question. Why are you allowing a lame duck speaker to destroy this institution? This is the people's house, not Pelosi's.
Now, keeping him honest, Congressman McCarthy, who accused the speaker of destroying the institution, voted to overturn election results just hours after the attack ended. And in the wake of it, he drummed Congresswoman Liz Cheney out of the Republican leadership. She is still on the Select Committee and said this about the speaker, about Speaker Pelosi's decision.
I agree with what the speaker has done.
And also, McCarthy, of course, wants to become speaker next year. Do you think that he deserves to be speaker in the aftermath of his actions here?
I think that any person who would be third in line to the presidency must demonstrate a commitment to the Constitution and a commitment to the rule of law. Minority Leader McCarthy has not done that.
So let's talk about it with our team. David, was it a mistake for Pelosi to do this?
No, listen, I think you got to go back to the Rubicon that was crossed when there was an opportunity to create a 9/11 style commission, five Republicans, five Democrats, each with the ability to veto subpoenas and so on. A real fact-finding commission. The Republicans opposed it, and they opposed it. And it was very clear, and it was reported at the time because they felt like the results of it would be an embarrassment, and it would be a particular embarrassment to the former president of the United States. And so they couldn't countenance that, especially going into the midterm elections. So once that happened, they adopted a strategy, which is anything they do, we're going to call partisan. And they sort of, by putting Jordan and Banks on this committee, guys who were January 6th deniers, they essentially really were baiting Pelosi. And they're fine. They're doing what you know they would do. They say this is going to be a partisan exercise. But it would be an empty exercise if you have people on the committee who are there simply to blow the thing up. And that's what those guys were there to do.
And the speaker knew very well that they were doing exactly what David said, baiting her into saying, no way. Those two have no business being on this committee because they don't agree on the basic set of facts that you need to agree on to set out on a mission to find
So she's
out.
Faced with the, does she take the bait?
Exactly.
She knows it's bait or not.
Exactly. And so what she settled on at the end was that no matter what she does politically, they're going to attack her. And if they're on the committee, they're going to attack her from within. If they're not, they're going to say that this is just a political farce. So she did what she knew was right, which is how can you have a committee with people on it who don't believe in the basic idea that this is even necessary, that even what we saw, like the president said, happened before our eyes. Yeah.
And I think we often forget, I mean, Kevin McCarthy has had so many transformations in the 6 months or so since January 6th. But that day, he said that Donald Trump was responsible for what happened on that day. And yet he stands here with the outrage that you saw in that clip.
Which was more outrage than he actually expressed about the attack, I got to say.
Exactly. I mean, and the point is, I think McCarthy he has been trying to navigate this himself. And the objective really is just to try to get out of the situation. He doesn't want to talk about it, doesn't want to investigate it. He didn't even, I don't think, really want to have Jim Jordan and Jim Banks on that committee investigating Speaker Pelosi. I think that he believes the best thing for Republicans is just to not be there at all. And that is ultimately where we are in this situation.
I just want to play what Speaker Pelosi told Armando Raju today.
We have a bipartisan quorum. We can proceed.
What was it about Jordan and Banks in particular? Because Nels also voted to overturn the election.
That was not the criterion, as I told you yesterday.
Yeah, what was the criteria?
Read my statement.
What do you make of the calculus?
Well, look, I think she was put in a no-win situation. It's not just that they voted against the thing. It's that they have been out there deliberately undermining the process before it even started, and they're going to have access to sensitive documents. I think at the end of the day, that becomes very scary, that you're gonna have a process that needs to have some integrity. They're really bad and dangerous people who were involved in attacking America's government during a joint session of Congress. These people are very, very dangerous. Information may be shared inside that committee, and you don't want it to end up in the wrong hands. So I think she was put in a very bad situation. She could have rolled the dice, and then the thing becomes a clown show internal, but it could also become very dangerously external. I think she had to put together a bipartisan group that could work and could function. She was not allowed to do that by Kevin McCarthy, and I think she took the better road.
Scott,
you see it differently.
Yeah, I do. I think she should have left them on. I mean, these are elected members of Congress. You may not like them. She may not like them. She clearly doesn't like them. But they are elected. They represent their districts. They're members in good standing inside the Republican conference. But Kevin McCarthy's decision.
I have a question for you, though, honestly. So many more Republicans, though, besides those two, don't you think is a little bit poking the bear? No.
Well, my second point was going to be, think about the internal conference politics of this. Kevin McCarthy's dream is to be Speaker of the House. And so when he gets to that point, I think the Republicans are going to win the House. That's my view. But when he gets to that point of trying to become the Speaker, he's got to have all corners of that conference aligned. And the idea that you weren't going to put somebody from the Jordan wing of the conference on a big high-profile deal like this, of course he was going to do it. If you think that those two guys are a clown show, your words, or that they're going to turn it into a farce, then wouldn't it have been better to let them make fools of themselves in the eyes of the American people? If that's how you feel about what their performance would be, to me, what Pelosi did was give ammunition to the Republican argument that this was always partisan from the beginning. All they want to do is embarrass Trump and keep this in the news and make it real political. Well, the fact that she won't let McCarthy's designees onto the committee, I think it gives ammunition to that. So I think it was a misstep. She should have let the Republicans operate. And they're going to do what they do, whether they're on the committee or not.
But, Scott, we should get to the bottom line purpose of all this. There actually was a catastrophic event on January 6th that threatened our democracy. There should be an honest effort to get to the core of what happened and why. You have two people there who were there, they're there for the express purpose of being in opposition, not in fact-finding, but to blow up the process. So if you're going to, even if it is six Democrats or whatever it is and one Republican, if it is a legitimate process, orderly process, you have a chance at least of surfacing some information that is worthwhile. By the way, we should point out that Kevin McCarthy may have made all that calculus, and he may have discussed it with President Trump when he sat down with him just a few days ago as this whole thing was coming to the fore. So, I mean, you're right. He wants to be Speaker of the House, and that is his sine qua non. That is all he is about. And all of these considerations about the well-being of our democracy and what happened on January 6th, those are secondary conditions. Those are secondary issues for Kevin McCarthy. The question is, should it be for the United States Congress? Is that healthy for the country?
I disagree that they would have been able to wreck or derail this commission. Would they have asked questions that, folks didn't like? Maybe. Would they have brought up information that people don't think is germane? Maybe. But ultimately, this commission to have public legitimacy needs to have bipartisan buy-in. You're correct, whoever said earlier that, they had a chance to do this 5-5 and they passed on that. But if what you want to happen is some public legitimacy about getting to the bottom of this, how can you throw off the Republicans that the Republican leader wants to have and then try to go out and get that legitimacy, even if you don't like the Republican she nominated or that Kevin McCarthy nominates?
She announced the thing, McCarthy said this was going to be a partisan exercise. It was pre-branded. So it doesn't matter what she did. They were going to say the same thing. And I disagree with you. You're not giving Jordan the credit he deserves. He's an anarchist within the legislative process. And I think a lot of the Republicans you hang around with would acknowledge that as well.
I think there are a lot of Republicans who believe that, look, Jordan is representative of more than just Jim Jordan in this conference. There's a lot of people that believe what he does on a number of different issues. I think Pelosi should have left him in. I'm just telling you, to take away the legitimacy, to give Kevin McCarthy the argument that she gave him today, which is to say, look at this, these partisans, you can't trust these folks. We tried to give them some Republicans, they wouldn't take it. I think she made a mistake. And now this commission is always going to be argued to be political by Republicans, whereas if you had some Republicans on there, at least she could have said, look, I gave Jim Jordan his say, and here was the report anyway.
And what about Liz Cheney? I mean, is she not?
I said Jim Jordan was a Republican in good standing, and I will say she is not presently in that conference a Republican in good standing. So, you know, for the argument of this panel about who should be on it, she doesn't count because the Republicans have already decided.
Well,
you know, she doesn't represent.
If that's the barometer, though, Marjorie Taylor Greene is a Republican of good standing. I mean, so if he had put her on the committee, would that have been okay as well?
Look, she's a pretty junior member of the conference. He picked
that's one deficiency.
He picked two people who are representative of a good chunk of the conference, who were very prominent during impeachment, by the way, which a lot of Republicans view this as, well, we participated in that, so why wouldn't we participate in this? And I think it was pretty apparent he was going to go down this road to begin with. So
do you think he discussed this with Trump?
I don't know, but I will tell you this. You know my views on January 6th. It was heinous.
I know.
It was awful.
I know you feel that way.
And I'm still vibratingly angry about it today. I think we ought to get to the bottom of it. I think Pelosi ought to let this go forth. And I ultimately believe the most important review is what's being done at the Justice Department. I hope all these people go to jail for violating the sanctity of our democracy.
It is still remarkable to me Liz Cheney is no longer a Republican according to the Republican
Party.
That's
exactly what I was just thinking. And based especially knowing you, Scott, and especially based on what you just said about January 6th, what does it say about the GOP that somebody who stands up and says, I think that what happened was wrong. I think that the lies that were being perpetuated by the then president and all of the people who, according to this latest book, including Jim Jordan, who she claimed was responsible in part for January 6th. What does it say about the party that she is not in good standing because she wants to get to the bottom of it? And those like Jim Jordan are in good standing with the GOP leadership.
Yeah, I mean, it says we're wrestling with this issue internally. And right now, you know, people with her view and the way she's gone about it has angered not just the Jim Jordans of the world, but there are even more moderate rank and file members who don't think she handled herself properly. The conference has spoken on that.
Abby, you want to give your final thought?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that we have to keep in mind here that Kevin McCarthy decided to take his balls and go home. He could have had three members on that committee, one of whom did vote to not certify the election. Congressman Nels, and two others who didn't, but he chose not to do that for a reason, and it's because there's greater political benefit for Republicans in not playing ball at all. I don't necessarily buy the argument that he really wanted to have some veneer of legitimacy by putting Jim Jordan on this committee. I think he wanted to not participate altogether, and Pelosi was put in a tough spot. She had no choice but to do what she did. But it just happens to also be the outcome that I think McCarthy thinks is most advantageous to Republicans.
Thanks, everybody. Second hour 360 is just ahead. Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff is going to join us to talk about what is next for the January 6th House Select Committee now that the Republican leadership is boycotting the investigation. Schiff is obviously a Democratic member of the panel. We'll be right back.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.